God.
Attention. Attention. Monday news. Pope Paul, who holds the See of Rome in Catholic vernacular, the seat or chair of Peter, passed away during the night with a heart attack. Regrets has been sent from the leadership of nations both in the communist, socialist, and capitalist world. He was hailed for bringing some peace between Jews and Catholics who had historically been pitted against each other. He was the head of one of the richest institutions on a level of monopoly capitalism in the world. He had 700 million followers as the Pope of the Church of Rome, the Roman Catholic Church. The College of Cardinals will be meeting to elect, after 9 days of mourning, a new Pope. A name that is heard frequently is Giovanni Vannelli. Little is known about his orientation, whether it is more humanistic than Pope Paul, or more inclined to be involved in theology. It seems I remember him being somewhat conservative. Spacecraft from the USA to Venus delayed one day because of lack of liquid helium. The contractors did not come through on time. Another tanker will be coming tomorrow so that the spacecraft can be on its way to Venus to help, I suppose, pollute that planet with U.S. capitalism. Inflation between January and March wiped out the personal income gains of just the whole year, just between January and March. Cost of living wiped out the personal income gains of the entire last year. The dollar buys now less, 19 cents less than it did at the beginning of the year, for instance. Dozens of investigators checking general services, fleet of cars for fraud on gas, car wash, etc. General Services Administration, government vehicles, government bureaucrats, and private business involved in some kind of conspiracy to defraud the American taxpayers. Secretary Vance continues his emergency talks with Sadat, who has virtual dictatorial power over Egypt since his referendum. They're meeting in Alexandria. Talks with Begin and Secretary Vance have been completed. Israeli officials said there was a good atmosphere, which tells you very little about what came out of it. The second night of heavy Syrian gunner shelling of the fascist Christian militia. BBC says the Christians started it. CBS seems to agree to that analysis also. Carter said of Pope Paul VI, he was a clear moral beacon in these troubled times. Tokyo money market, the dollar is being balanced only for the first time in 5 days by the Japanese trading company buying dollars in massive millions to balance accounts. Thus does not represent, said Voice of America, a real increase in the value of the beleaguered plummeting, falling U.S. dollar. TV programming on trial. It seems that the NBC network has hired the most powerful lawyers in the United States to fight the case against the San Francisco mother that claims the NBC television program Born Innocent, showing a woman raped by seven teenagers and then her own daughter having exactly the same kind of rape and molestation just hours thereafter, was caused by TV. Undoubtedly, the networks will win because the private individual cannot pay for the legal cost that the monopolies can. And the news media and the press, you must constantly be reminded, is the arm of the reactionary multinationals that rule the United States and even rule the president by intimidation and out of fear that a president has because of the selective assassinations in the past of the Kennedys, Malcolm, Martin, so forth. I cannot help but remember when Mrs. Carter wrote me a personal note that we have still in our possession, thanking me for trying to get medical assistance into Cuba. But times have changed. Hickory, North Carolina. All the residents of that fair-sized city have been evacuated in a chemical fire. They do not know what kind of dangerous chemicals have been emitted in the air. They are moving people out for miles downwind. Thousands have been evacuated due to the accident or subversion. It is not said, but the emphasis was that it's just an accident. That's the danger of nuclear war and chemical biological warfare. There's always bound to be an accident somewhere, and this is a major one. Beirut, Lebanon, heavy arms fire. From the heavy arms fire between the Syrians, pro-Soviet, and the Christian phalangist, fascist upheld by the Zionist expansionist state of Israel, caused several deaths into the hundreds, and also hundreds have been injured. Beirut, once the most beautiful city in the world, where the American University, a foreign university called American University abroad, is practically leveled now from the struggles and conflicts between the right-wing fascist extremist and the Muslim left and the Syrians that have been trying to be a part of the peacekeeping force of the United Nations. Edward Durrell Stone, architect of Kennedy Center and Radio City, died at nearly the age of 70. Cape Canaveral launch delayed again. Not enough liquid helium. U.S. economy is not as efficient as it used to be. The contractor has now failed a second day to provide the helium for what USA called an important space launching of a rocket and satellite to the planet Venus. FBI, Washington. Public Affairs Division of the FBI support wiretapping. They say that there are limits on the duration. They can only be maintained until the objective for which they are authorized is completed. Now that is a strange kind of logic. Who decides the objectives? Tape recordings are made of all conversations. The recordings go to a judge and must be kept. All of your conversations must be kept for at least 10 years before they can be destroyed. Supposedly, you will receive 90 days notice after your telephone has been taped are tapped. However, if the word of the FBI on this regard is no more value than the U.S. government that says under the Freedom of Information you're guaranteed your FBI files, then it isn't worth a damn. Because I know that I have been the subject of FBI harassment from the time I went to see Paul Robeson. They tapped my phone and interrogated your mother, who should always be revered, on the 9th day of every month, because she was a great, great soul that gave her all, and it will be this Wednesday that there should be some solemn giving of ourselves for a moment of remembrance for her fineness, not understanding, withstanding, standing up to the FBI's interrogation under heat lamps, right in the midst of her employees, where she was shop stewardess and subsequently lost her job because she believed in me. She didn't understand Marxist-Leninism, socialism, but she withstood. Then later, there were many other incidents, like when Charlie Touche did not know the cause and turned me into the FBI. As many people considered everything, you know, socialistic, to be evil. Immediately after the telephone call, members were interrogated like Esther Mueller, and there was references made to past things. Esther was asked who provided her clothes, and she didn't even have any income at all, not Social Security, nothing. They asked her if I bought her hose in a sarcastic fashion, being rude and crude to a woman at that time in her 60s, as if this were any of their business. They asked her of my views, what they were, and so forth and so on, interrogating her in a most despicable fashion. Another time, or even earlier than that, the FBI called me up merely because I planned to travel to Europe and might go to the Soviet Union. Though the planned tour was a U.S. tour by a U.S. travel agency, way after the McCarthy era, it was some 90 days after I had given up the planned travel, and they called and interrogated me over and over as to why I wanted to go to the Soviet Union. And there have been so many incidents I cannot remember. The FBI, we know through Carolyn Pickering in the Indianapolis Star, revealed to a person she thought friendly to her and unfriendly to us, that the FBI, San Francisco police, had conspired together to bring about the Kinsolving articles and the negative attack in the Indianapolis Star because of my giving aid to Angela Davis and other black people. Chief Salisbury of Ukiah informed me, I think because he liked us, because we were good citizens, saw what I had done with youth. We were not in any way ever involved in crime. And he was beginning to learn a little bit, at least about integration, even though he was a reactionary. He was so stupid that he once made the statement, there's nothing wrong with Marxism, it's just communism that's wrong. Well, they're both, they're of course both synonymous. Maybe at one time he'd had some exposure to the truth. Anyway, he was also opposed to the FBI taking over local police files, which they now have centralized. So he informed me that there was a long file on me in the FBI. Nonetheless, we have never got an admission from the FBI of that file, neither have they sent it to me. The CIA also insists that I'm not in their files, but obviously if other members of this church, including George Touche and Sharon Amos, Jim Randolph, and a host of others, were admitted to be in the files, I would be in the files. But they said they had no file on me. So there are no more ethics in the FBI than there were in the Dirty Tricks era of Nixon before Watergate. Anyway, the cost of wiretapping annually in the United States is close to $2 million. The FBI pays out. There have been 493 arrests this year thus far, from people's privacy being invaded on the telephone with a combined sentences from the 493 arrests of 1,200 years total in the prisons. It is essential that everyone see Uptight tonight that did not. It carries an immense message about the black struggle, armed struggle, and the plight of the black. A lot of drama. It's a Hollywood movie, but there's essential messages in it, and all must see it. Those who are taking extra classes, we will excuse you to see the movie, and you will have three more Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday after your regular socialist classes. You will finish up those 76 that did not pass last week's test. Remember, yesterday's news that was given must be introduced. I'm asking my daughter Ava, one of the CAOs, administrators, in which counseling is in her department, to see that all those that have ever mentioned going back to the United States, having nostalgia for it, even though they may have overcome it, I want them to be in a controlled setting, getting the news, and helping hand from a teacher so they can understand what's happening in USA. And then maybe those that still lust after the filth of the terror of USA, its racism that murdered several innocent black citizens yesterday, police shootings that have occurred into the thousands in the major cities of innocents and no policemen yet sentenced. Perhaps some of the news will get through to the hearts of people and make them feel guilty and ashamed for looking back, as Lot's wife did, to Sodom and Gomorrah. Because USA is worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. It's Babylon, filled with race hate, filled with the money, monetary class, the rich, elite, monopoly capitalists who are raining bombs right now on Africa, killing babies and destroyed. There's one correction on the blackboard that Teresa does so well. On one occasion alone, our government tax dollars that we all help pay and cause us to have blood on our hands killed 2 million innocent people in Indonesia that descended against the dictatorship that was put in power by the CIA. San Luis Obispo, California. 250 okay, gathered to protest the 33rd anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima, in which it has now been estimated that between Hiroshima and Nagasaki, 1,300,000 have been killed. That's a lot of deaths. The subsequent deaths thereafter by radiation.
1224, do you copy?
And all the deaths involved. It's always been suppressed. They never give you the full news till about 30 years later. Well, all 250 were arrested in the fascist police state atmosphere where they were conducting their peaceful protest in San Luis Obispo, California. A woman, when the church was open for anyone to make testimony in First Baptist Church, where President Carter teaches a Sunday school class, stood up and gave Bible verses to support and morality, ethical moralities to support her position against the neutron bomb, commonly called, jokingly even by U.S. government, the nigger bomb that has been provided to the Union of South Africa to destroy concentration camps there filled with blacks and our own black and Indian people of color population in USA. She was drug out of the church, bodily assaulted by the elders of the First Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., and arrested. Three appropriation bills deregulating natural gas have been passed in spite of protest from many, like Senator Edward Kennedy. The president has shown that he's indeed on the side, or being intimidated to be on the side, of the big utility corporations that are privately owned. The Worldwide Church of God that was founded by Herbert Armstrong, you've heard it, World Tomorrow, It sends its filth even into this part of the world. The follower, successor, was Ted Garner Armstrong, Garner Ted Armstrong, who was the leader, successor potential, and was actively assuming the leadership of the $65+ million annual income that pours into that racist religion, where Archie and I were thrown out because people of color are not allowed in their meetings. Anyway, today, Herbert Armstrong denounced his son as a moral reprobate. There had been brief press coverage of adultery, homosexuality, and other crimes such as raking off church monies. Of course, he was not political, so there was very little mass coverage like they give to we who are socialists. But today it got coverage, at least in the Voice of America. They think, however, Voice of America does, that the son will take the substantial following. Naturally, people are very animalistic. They follow youth, not honesty and integrity. The old man, Herbert Armstrong, at least, was trying to practice the tenets of his faith in terms of morality. But his son, Garner Ted Armstrong, who had been once defrocked and then brought back after he repented over committing several immoral acts and criminal acts by his father and the church elders. But now, Herbert Armstrong, speaking sharply wherever he could, demanded that people, if they had conscience at all, would stop listening to the voice of the world tomorrow, his son Garner Ted Armstrong, and cease following him because, he said, he is a devil of immorality. President Carter has been taken on sharply by Senator Kennedy. Kennedy has shown schizophrenia in the past by supporting Senate Bill 1437, hopeful that he would become the chairman of the Senate Judicial Committee. Perhaps not getting it, his conscience is bothering him somewhat, or maybe he thinks he knows the wave of the future. But all other pollsters show that his position is not as accurate as Carter. Kennedy rejects Carter's health policy restrictions. He calls for full comprehensive health program, universal health plan for everyone. He feels health care should be a guarantee of the Constitution. We don't condition the right of health care, said Senator Edward Kennedy, if we are moral, if we are human beings. He also opposes the deregulation of natural gas. Kennedy opposes the program of Carter bowing to the rich monopoly capitalist utilities. He said Carter had been affected by the heavy lobbying and pressure of the natural gas monopoly capitalist industries. He said that in actual cost, the American people were being misled because the U.S. today, due to the fact that the AMA has consistently lobbied to stop any kind of cost regulations on their charges and cutbacks from pharmacies and other doctors. When a doctor sends a surgeon a case, there's cutbacks. He said, as a consequence, Canada, that has guaranteed health care for all of its citizens for only $1 per month, all prescriptions, dental care, surgeries, and any hospitalization is covered for all the Canadian people. In fact, now all industrial countries of the capitalist world, except USA, which is the filthy ogre of monopoly capitalism, has guaranteed health care. Kennedy says ours, due to the fact that the AMA is making themselves rich as profiteers, the doctors are making themselves rich, the MDs, the cost of our medical care, government-provided medical care now, which barely meets even minimum needs, is 8.5% of the gross national product, whereas in Canada, where there is guaranteed health care, comprehensive health care, it's only 7.2%. The doctors are fighting Kennedy's plan hotly, and so is the news media. This is the basic coverage of the news. I don't think that there's anything else of vital significance in the news except commentary. At this time, we will begin some commentary. Guyana, this will fall under required testing that may be tonight, unless I see far more interest in news than I did yesterday. You can listen while you eat. You can listen while you relax. There's nothing better to do with your mind than to teach yourself to listen. Guyanese return to the land of hope, said the Prime Minister Burnham of our beloved Guyana. He is the Prime Minister of the government that is ruled by the People's National Congress, our party. Many persons who have deserted Guyana for more so-called developed countries, believing that there lay fame and fortune, have returned home disillusioned and with a new concept after seeing the terrible racism and other social problems, high crime rate, pollution, and high cost of living in USA, Britain, and Canada. They now see Guyana as a land of hope, a country rapidly moving ahead to reach its goal of socialism, said Guyana Broadcasting Network, the socialist-owned radio network for Guyana. They see this as a land of hope which offers equality to all, irrespective of race, color, or creed. Some of the persons back from USA, England, and Canada have returned on their own, while others have not. These latter were forced to return because they got into hot water with the immigration authorities of the countries where they had hoped to seek their fortunes because they were unable to keep out of debt, which is one of the requirements of being an immigrant, that you must not become a burden, get on welfare, or accept any governmental aid. Others were just restricted and rejected because of race. Many of them found themselves in trouble because they sought and secured employment, possessing only students and visitors' visas, which preclude working in these respective countries of England, France, and Canada. Three persons from the quarantine who arrived yesterday were deported by the Canadian Immigration Police for overstaying in that country. They told the Guyana Broadcasting Studios and the Guyana Chronicle that things are very rough and tough in Canada and are getting worse. I never dreamed there was such race hatred, said the three. One of them said that once you are not a landed immigrant in Canada, you always have to be on the move to ensure that you are not caught by the authorities, and they're not giving landed immigrant status to people of color, Asian, black, or Indian, these days. He declared that because of living costs, many couples have to work 16 hours a day before they can even meet their expenses, and then they have to go into debt. The three deported Guyanese said they are advising anyone who wants to go to USA or Canada to make a living to do so legally, and then they advise against it strongly because of the racism and the terrible social problems and the crime of the big cities. One of them said that many people believe that Canada, England, and the United States of America are beds of roses, but added that it is not so. They said that rent is very high, as is the cost of foodstuff and clothing, going out of sight, and above all, you always have to be on the lookout for the racist and the immigration men who behave differently to people of color. The trio that came in yesterday back to Guyana as their home have no plans whatsoever to go back, but would like to acquire a piece of land in beautiful Guyana and do agricultural work. One of them said that since the government is adopting a socialist policy, he feels that a massive compulsory purchasing campaign to protect tenants should be made the aim of removing the scourge of the private landlord from the society, and backs the Prime Minister's plan and the People's National Congress, our ruling party's promise to do so. In Burmese, there are thousands of families who are in no position to own their own homes and who are eager for the state to buy the land and construct houses, which they in turn will buy from the state. Said the Guyana Broadcasting Studios, quoting the Prime Minister in probably the sharpest terms for armed struggle and the dictatorship of the proletariat, said people should also know that developed countries like China and the Soviet Union did not attain socialism by talking, but by armed struggle, by revolution. And if the Guyanese upper class do not intend to make radical changes, then it is up to the government to take drastic measures as seem fit, said Prime Minister Burnham. A strong position of policy. Critic of the Guyanese government, one chap named Hopkinson, who is being used as an example by the PPP, the opposition paper, The Mirror. They accuse him, they charge that he's being harassed because he admitted that he had taken a loan of $9,400 from the Guyanese government between 1970 and 1974. He was here for a visit and had interfered in the referendum, though he was no longer a citizen. He admitted that he intends to repay the loan after finishing his studies, but Guyana law dictates that you cannot leave the country owing a government debt without special permission. He said he admitted that he would not be able to repay it until the 1980s. In the meantime, his guarantor, who is the head of the Upper Mazaruni Hydroelectric Scheme, was advised accordingly, said he. Hopkinson explained that over the past 6 years, the actual cost of his studies ran into some $64,000 USA, of which the Guyana government contributed the $9,400. And he makes a kind of light of that. Guyana provided less than 10% of my studies. But for strange reasons, they want to control me, he remarked. But it was the headlines of the PPP's organ, the People's Progressive Party, the opposition paper. Remember, the PPP is not our party in the government. It is the opposition party under Dr. Chetty Jagan. It said immigration officer discriminates against those who oppose the referendum. But in reading the entirety of it, you can see that it is nothing but propaganda. I read all sides of every question. He said he was going back to United States to help smash the racist, fascist elements in the PNC and to help get support in USA for a national united government. I am sure that that's a lie. This graduate of Central High School, Hopkinson, alias Lumumba, will never, certainly in the United States, with his family, studying in a university, seeking the good life at Denver University, possibly, conceivably, ever be working for socialism. So this is just another opportunism of the opposition in this regard. He said that the amendment bill was a big fraud after the Guyana government was kind enough to let him go, in spite of him not paying, which was quite merciful on their part, it would seem to me, and took his word that he'll pay them back in 1980, which of course he will not. He said he has been living in the USA for the past 10 years and he's not paid them. Is linked with an organization which is committed to total exposure of the minority character of the PNC regime to which he was at one time associated. After the July 10 referendum, Hopkinson told a press conference of local and foreign journalists that the referendum was naked fraud and carried out with no regard for socialist principles of democracy. Well, there must be some democracy and trust in Guyana government, or they would have never let him out, so he could have talked to the press in the first place. Nonetheless, so has it. Another hypocritical headline, two headlines, says Guyana violates human rights. And it gives a quote from the PDM. Now, the trouble is, the People's Democratic Movement, that the Mirror, the opposition paper of the TPP, Dr. Chetty Jagan, carries it, has issued a statement condemning the referendum of July 10, 1978. Now, the mayor claims to be pro-Soviet and communist, but the PDM is anti-communist, anti-socialist, and is the most pro-capitalist element in Guyana. The statement, I won't even begin to give you all this propaganda, where we find the mirror carrying the PDM as some sort of champions of justice. The PDM, the right-wing capitalist, which represents very few people in Guyana, said the people of Guyana will never accept the results of a referendum that was carried out the way it was. Then, moreover, the England Manchester Guardian carried the head of the PDM abroad, who left Guyana several years ago. It carried a very broad-sided attack on Guyana, and there are several press attacks now in England and USA against Guyana. But the main thrust of the PDM attack, the mayor did not bother to say, I happen to get that over the radio BBC, is that the PDM chairperson there, a lady, East Indian, called for NATO interference because Guyana is going communist under Prime Minister Burnham and the People's National Congress, which rules the country. Very strange that the mayor is so nitpicky as to utilize right-wing extremists to make arguments against the government. This mischievous report in the foreign press, the manner in which events and developments in Guyana are mischievously spattered in the foreign press, has been amply demonstrated this past few days. In this report that I mentioned to you in London and Manchester Guardian, the report captioned Guyanese roundup attack and written by the paper's diplomatic correspondent, Patrick Keatley. The Manchester Guardian is the instrument of the Liberal Party, which is a very conservative, arch-right-wing party, whose head, a lord, a parliamentarian, member of parliament, distinguished man, who would have been the next Home Affairs Minister, was just indicted for murder and conspiracy to murder others. Anyway, the Manchester Guardian is a large capitalist press, and its attack on Guyana would only be a badge of approval for we who love socialism. Patrick Keatley in the Manchester Guardian reported that there has been a wave of arrests of leading members of the opposition on the eve of the polling in the national referendum. According to the report, Mrs. K. Rahman, representative of the People's Democratic Movement, the chairperson I was mentioning, said she had received word that her husband, the PDM leader here, was taken into custody by the police at the weekend and released early on Monday. In addition, the report quoted Mrs. Rahman, R-A-H-A-M-A-N, as saying, they are still holding my son and two other PDM, that's the right-wing capitalist small party here, officials. From what I have learned in messages from Georgetown, the police have also arrested leading members of Dr. Jagan's party, the PPP, which is the opposition party, the Progressive People's Party, the People's Progressive Party, as well as members of the Working People's Alliance, more or less a black nationalist party, and other opposition groups. However, checks with the police have revealed that there is absolutely no truth to the story of arrest that she may mention of in the Manchester Guardian. We, of course, have seen how many times we've been lied on. In fact, there's not a bit of truth that any parliamentarian, and certainly no PPP member of parliament, was arrested or held by the police for any alleged election offense. Momentarily, one PPP member was asked questions, detained, asking questions for interfering with the electoral process by Police Commissioner Lloyd Barker, even before he had ascertained the full facts. The government required, however, the Police Commissioner, Lloyd Barker, to apologize to the parliamentarian. He was never put in jail. And the GAWU, GAWU members, were held at Cane Grove but they were in a car, allegedly, with an iron bar, pickets, and 27 clubs in their possession. The police felt the clubs were offensive weapons and took the six men to Eve Leary. They too were properly released on instructions from the commissioner. Not even booked. The story was obviously yet another transparent attempt to besmirch, smear the leadership and the name of our beloved Guyana in newspapers of capitalism abroad. And what is even more disconcerting, shocking, is that Guyanese should be stooping to such low and devious means. Mrs. Rahman, whoever she is, there's no history of her husband, much less his being arrested in Guyana, said the Guyana Chronicle, was also reported as saying that she and other members of the Guyanese community in London were bitterly opposed to what she saw as the ruling party's attempt to remove Article 73 from the Constitution. The British government granted to us the right of being a colonial dependence. It's the part about them being a dependence. God Almighty, that's how right-wing she is. But here in Mrs. Rahman's bombshell, we say that Britain, as our mother country, should not stand by and simply allow Guyana to become communist under the Prime Minister Burnham and the People's National Congress. We appeal to the British government and the USA and NATO to act to see that human rights are protected from communism in Guyana today. And imagine the mayor, the opposition, which is supposedly pro-Moscow communist paper, the opposition PPP, using her and the PDM charges when they are as reactionary and fascist as hell. Guyana is now an independent, sovereign, and non-aligned socialist state, having 12 years ago ceased being a colonial appendage to the British monarchy. But certainly while Mrs. Rahman, whoever she is, has been taken out of the colony has not been taken out of her, said Guyana Broadcasting Studios this morning. Continuing with other news and commentary. It's important that we study all the things that are on the boards. Look at them well. Study them well. Go back and get the last-minute capsulization of the agricultural meeting of Friday. Know all that. And the last part, capsulation of the Tuesday agricultural meeting. You'll be required to know that on the test tonight and no later than tomorrow when you get a written test, depending upon the interest shown. Otherwise, there's a required showing tonight, a required showing of Uptight, a very good movie with the best black actors in Hollywood, which I can give you a total lesson. To get that, you'd have all your news put together. It's very short. Later, I do require that all make requests to see the Scottsboro Brothers, a film of how nine black young men were framed, and there were nines of thousands. They just represent some. How they were framed in court after court, even as high as the Supreme Court. Even with witnesses, medical doctors, proving that there was no semen in the women they raped. Witnesses admitting that they had lied. You need to see it. It carries an immense message that all should be aware of. Also know Mozambique, its history. It's very important to know its history now, and North and South Korea, and the position papers that I gave yesterday of Guyana on its stands about socialism and imperialism and the multinational corporations. Some of it's on the blackboard, not all the details, and its position on full support for the demands of the Democratic People's Republic, Communist North Korea's demand for reunification with South Korea that's presently under a dictatorship imposed by USA. We shall go on with some of the news. We, as I said, need to know as much of the news as we can. We can never know enough. Talking about Mozambique, the South African press is never known for its flattering coverage of its Marxist neighbor, Mozambique. But last month, in the relatively moderate Johannesburg Star, something slipped in. There was a surprising three-part series which spoke favorably of the new Marxist-Leninist Socialist Society being built in the former Portuguese colony that was upheld by U.S. monopoly capitalism and its lackeys. One of the first South African correspondents admitted to Mozambique since independence in 1975, the Star's Alan Pizzi, who was later arrested, reported, yes, arrested, for writing the truth, P-I-Z-E-Z-E-Y, detained without trial. They have no trial when you speak the truth there. He reported that after traveling freely wherever he wanted to go in the country for 3 weeks, my overriding impression of Mozambique and Frelimo's socialism, the governing party, their ambitions and their practices is very favorable. It may not be a system that we in South Africa would choose, but then it is not my country to decide. In contrast to the standard South African portrayal of Mozambique as suffering from a ruined socialist economy and a repressive political Marxist system, the Johannesburg Star managed to speak the truth for once. They described the Frelimo socialist government of Mozambique as pragmatic, popular, and relaxed, meeting the needs of its people with food and medical care. The government does not seem to feel any threat from its people, Pizzi wrote for the Johannesburg South African Star. President Samora Machel, M-A-C-H-E-L, lives in a modest house. The police often go unarmed. Overall, the police of Mozambique seem well pleased with the efforts of their government. He notes that shops still carry goods from other countries and that they're trying to maintain trade and good neighborly relations with all. As you know, Mozambique is being backed and supported economically by both USSR, Cuba, and China. And Mozambique is now under heavy aerial attack from both Rhodesia and South Africa with U.S. military aid, since the USA openly showed her racism by lifting the ban against arms last week in both the Senate and the House of Representatives. And the Frelimo is welcoming an influx of foreign technicians, mostly, however, from socialist countries, but even those who are friendly are welcome from any country, including white South Africa. Pizzi says the country's development plans are severely hampered by a chronic shortage of skilled manpower due to the train that is done by capitalists to buy them out of the country and then often get them in foreign ports without enough money to get back and never getting the jobs they're promised. There was a literacy rate of almost 98% when the government took power 3 years ago, and it's been reduced in half already. The legacies of the Portuguese colonialists, supported by U.S. imperialists, left their mark, but he added that government officials admit their problems with disarming candor and seeming confident they can overcome them eventually, as says one of the Frelimo socialist government of Mozambique's representatives. It's the greatest accomplishments has been the dynamization of the population to work to build the country. He said, even as a capitalist, I have to admit it is perfectly fantastic how Mozambique has brought people from nothing but bush life into a modern, developed society in less than 3 years after their socialist revolution. That is news about Mozambique. Another U.S. move to strengthen ties. The White House announced that the highest level U.S. scientific delegation to visit the People's Republic of China will be going. The mission was proposed by National Security right-wing advisor Brzezinski during his trip to Beijing a few weeks ago, and marks the first time China has agreed to government-to-government talks on science and technology. The 14-member delegation is headed by Dr. Frank Press, Carter's science advisor, and will include the heads of NASA, the National Science Foundation, the National Institute of Health, and the U.S. Geological Survey. The visit contrasts sharply with the recent cancellation of U.S. scientific missions to Moscow in protest over the summary trial of the criminal Sharansky and Yuri Orlov. The U.S. had maintained such devout interest in their welfare, but refused to exchange them for two of the Wilmington 10, or one, each one of them, for some other political prisoner held in USA. USA just likes headlines. They are not really concerned. A setback for the Saudis in their new alliance, that Iraqis trying to move them away from U.S. dependence by making their own oil refinery equipment and weaponry. Setback for both of them. South Yemen, one of the Soviet Union's closest allies in the Middle East, appears to be even tighter with Moscow after the overthrow and firing squad execution of President Salem Rouhaya Ali. The 43-year-old leftist leader was toppled by his own Marxist National Liberation Front, led by Abdel Fattah Ismail, considered more pro-Soviet and pro-Marxist than Ali. Ismail is also a close political ally of radical Palestinian leader Dr. George Habash. Ismail and the ruling front opposed efforts by President Ali to improve ties with South Yemen's powerful reactionary neighbor, Saudi Arabia, and with the USA, who was seeking to court them out of the Soviet camp with CIA money, our tax dollars again. The New York Times reported that Ali had sent signals through diplomatic channels that he was eager to improve relations with the United States. Washington was trying to woo the small Marxist nation of 2 million people that is a very rich port and oil rich away from Moscow. U.S. diplomat Joseph Twinham's scheduled trip to South Yemen was canceled because of the military coup by the pro-Soviet elements of the army. But the State Department continued to express hope that developments in South Yemen will evolve in a way to permit a dialogue such as was envisaged with the Twinman mission. However, little has been evidence that that will take place. Little indeed, as South Yemen, the People's Democratic Republic of Yemen, has gone totally pro-Soviet in its ruling politburo. The new regime reportedly favors continued military support for the Soviet and Cuban-backed Ethiopian regime. Ethiopia and South Yemen straddle the entrance to the Red Sea. The new government is also said to favor increased support for leftist guerrillas in neighboring Oman. OMAN. Those guerrillas, liberation forces, are fighting the regime of Sultan Qaboos, a real fascist whose army is led by British officers and reinforced by Iranian secret police who are tortured, trained in torture by the US CIA. The overthrow of Ali was triggered by the assassination of North Yemen president, of capitalist North Yemen, Ahmed al-Ghashmi, who was scheduled to hold merger talks with South Yemen. The conservative North blamed the leftist South for the killing. The South Yemeni government called an emergency meeting to discuss the assassination and expel President Ali. They held him responsible. The deposed leader sought to rally loyal army units, but they were crushed in only 5 hours of heavy fighting in Aden, South Yemen's capital, now the People's Democratic Republic and pro-Soviet. This is certainly a very interesting aside to machinations of U.S. capitalism, and it seems to go on and on and on. There never is an end to U.S. capitalist machinations. They never tire of using our tax dollars, which, as I said, causes me, should cause you, a hell of a lot of guilt. The Arab League, of course, has now sanctioned South Yemen. Tensions between the strategically located Red Sea states of North and South Yemen escalated last week as progressive South Yemen said U.S.-backed North Yemen had invaded its territory and seized two of its border towns, but they were driven back by the pro-Soviet and pro-Cuban government. The accusation comes in the wake of the assassinations of the presidents of both Yemens within 2 days late last month. Ever since a Marxist government took power in South Yemen in 1969, North Yemen, supported by neighboring
Saudi Arabia and other reactionary fascist Arab regimes has adopted a hostile policy toward the Aden government, now known as the Democratic People's Republic, Marxist-Leninist state of South Yemen. And last July 2, reactionary Arab League countries voted to suspend diplomatic and political relations with South Yemen. The Arab League meeting held in Cairo was boycotted, however, by Syria, Libya, Algeria, and the Palestine Liberation Organization. By the way, those that attempted the killings of the Iraqis were not members of the Palestinian Liberation Organization. It is left of center. They were right-wing Palestinians, but not members of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, as the Blackboard mentioned. The 15 Arab League nations supporting the anti-South Yemen resolution said they held South Yemen responsible for the June 24 assassination of the North Yemeni capitalist president. South Yemen's leaders have denied the accusation and asserted that it is merely a pretext, an excuse for aggression against progressive Marxist-Leninist state of South Yemen. North Yemen president was killed by a booby-trap bomb, as you'll remember, placed in the attaché case of an emissary from South Yemen. The emissary died in the blast as well, and precisely who was responsible for the assassination remains a mystery. An improvement in the long-strained relations was apparently the goal of the South Yemeni's visit. Some think Saudi Arabia was responsible. And Saudi Arabia was opposed to an improvement of the strained relations between North and South Yemeni. Why would a reactionary capitalist don't mind killing off another capitalist leader, as they did with the capitalist North Yemen, in order to get their will? That's why there's no security in capitalism. No one should feel secure. Only socialism teaches responsibility and loyalty to one another. Like, I, before I would hurt you, would have my tongue cut out or my eyes plucked out. But capitalists cut down each other, members of their own family. It's nothing at all to see that. Father arresting son in government. It's happened in many, many reactionary governments, or the vice versa. The events in North Yemen were followed by a coup in South Yemen, during which the country's president, Salim Rubaiyah Ali, was executed by the People's Court. Last week, the country's new president, Nasir Mohammed, said the coup had been carried out because Rubaiyah had wished to set himself up in place of the collective leadership of the revolution, party and government, and form ties with CIA aid to U.S. imperialism. In other words, he was being paid off. Rubaiyah had also opposed the formation of a single vanguard party out of the three parties that currently exist. The new government has dismissed three of nine members of the government's top leadership, charging they backed Ali's policy of developing close contacts with Western imperialism, and they have been replaced by pro-Soviet members in the cabinet, thus giving the cabinet a majority of pro-Soviet leaders. Going on with the news, we'll see if there's any other news that is of any importance to you. I would think that we have just about covered enough, at least, of the news, unless we would perhaps give some documentary. And now we will give you a documentary that shows how style hides imperialist politics in music. Evita, music by Andrew Lloyd Webber, lyrics by Tim Rice on the MCA 2-11003 record. From those wonderful people who brought us Jesus Christ Superstar, that mess, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice, we now have Evita, E-V-I-T-A. That's right, a rock opera based on the life of Eva Peron from 1919 to 1952, the wife of the fascist dictator of Argentina, and she too served as dictator while he was not capacitated, he was ill. It has been a fully produced stage spectacular in London and USA for months. Iberia Airlines has already programmed it into the Muzak tape. In the USA, it has received more than the usual radio play. And probably it'll get more as the market becomes more conscious of the strategy, when they know the politics of the opera in the right-wing mood in USA. The opera, not surprisingly, presents world politics in the style of People magazine, where the most important variables are personality, one-to-one relationships, and above all, style. The dynamics of class struggle are there, as can be seen in the conflicts between the aristocracy and the more progressive aspects of the Peronist regime, and in Eva's identification with the fascist nationalistic desire of the Argentines. But they are clearly secondary to the personalities of the great men, and in this case, the great fascist woman. Eva is portrayed as a streetwise, ambitious, and sometimes ruthless woman with practical sense. Juan Perón, the fascist dictator of Argentina, is displayed as timid, more conservative than Eva. They were both pro-Hitler in World War II. He is predicted and projected as more conservative than Eva, more cynical and power-hungry. Analysis and criticism of their exploits are provided by a narrator named Shay. Everything's done, you see, to destroy symbols by having a narrator by the name of Shay, thus dirtying the name of socialism, using music to propagate and hypnotize people to be imperialist dupes. The narrator named Che, who bears a little resemblance to his more revolutionary namesake, Che Guevara, and whose only claim to fame on the record seems to be that he has invented an insecticide. The complexity and contradictions with which the personalities are developed serve primarily to heighten the appeal of Eva Perón. The tendency is to have nothing but respect and admiration for the woman who, amid intrigue and overwhelming contradictions, has the guts to act boldly. Even with all the plots, corruptions, and murders, we end up loving Eva for her style, in spite of the fact that the opera points out that she's a murderer and a torturer. But not for her politics. We love her for her style, those that are hypnotized by the music. Peronism represented a very complex and inherently contradictory political phenomenon. Its extreme nationalism, fascism, took on certain anti-imperialist characteristics at times, yet was coupled with fascistic tendencies all the time. It appealed in varying degrees to sectors of the working class, the petit bourgeoisie particularly, but mostly to the bourgeoisie. These forces competed for power in an unstable political situation, which was managed to a large extent through Juan's demagogic dictatorial capabilities and Eva's personal flair and alleged identification with the masses. The resulting tension produced enormous political repression, fascist repression in Argentina, as well as some gains for the workers who were not Jews, or people of color. The left, needless to say, plays no role whatsoever in the rock opera, which narrows its view solely to the politics of style. In focusing on personal style, instead of complex political questions, the album accurately depicts Eva's use of image as a way of temporarily smoothing over contradictions and holding on to power. When Che queries in song, why try to govern a country when you can become a saint? It is not a simple, some abstract reference to the woman as goddess after she died of cancer. Juan Perón actually tried to have Eva canonized as a saint by the Roman Catholic Church.